It's hard to imagine a book about the creator of one of America's most beloved comic strips causing much of a stir, but that's exactly what happened after David Michaelis's biography of Charles Schulz was published recently. The artist we meet in Schulz and Peanuts, a biography, is an ambitious but shy man, always plagued by doubt and loneliness despite of all his accomplishments. But some members of his family feel that Schulz comes across in the book as cold and unhappy and even unlikable. It's published by HarperCollins, and I'm very pleased that it brings David Michaelis back to this show today. Hello.
Thanks, Lonnie. Thanks for having me.
You've included dozens of Peanuts comic strips throughout the book. What kinds of connections did you find between Schulz's life and his work?
Schulz embedded the episodes, incidents, and people of his life in Peanuts in ways that surprised me throughout the 7 years I was working on the book. Again and again, I was struck by how immediate the transfer from life to art was.
Did the people around him know that he was doing that?
He actually felt very strongly that Peanuts was a complete work of art, and I agree. I think it is a work of genius. He would borrow occasionally, very occasionally, from his children. His son Monty was the supplier of the Red Baron, and a daughter was the supplier of the famous buttering the toast joke, and so forth and so on. He insisted, however, that he wasn't drawing parallels from his own life, that he was putting himself into the characters, but not patterning them after his life.
So we should not see Charlie Brown as Schulz's alter ego?
It's more complicated than that. Schulz placed a great deal, I think, of his own loneliness and alienation in childhood and high school years into his experience of Charlie Brown, and into Charlie Brown goes the fortitude that he brought to his own ambition. It's hard to believe sometimes that Charles Schulz actually kept going, considering what he was up against as a child. But he didn't give up, and that fortitude is what shows up again in Charlie Brown. I guess I was most surprised when I would find, for example, here's Charlie Brown, throwing Lucy off the football team. And, well, it turned out that was the same month he was trying to figure out how to get out of his marriage. His wife and he were at the end, and he was trying to make decisions. And in a sense, artistically, he let Charlie Brown do some decision-making for him.
And Lucy was, some people say, based on his wife, his first wife, Joyce. Was he sending her a message, or would she not have even been aware of that?
I asked Joyce, now Joyce Doty, whether she was aware of those particular strips, and especially the strips that followed, in which Snoopy is trying to figure out whether or not he was attracted to the girl beagle at the Daisy Hill Puppy Farm because of her soft paws, or was it the teasing, and to then find that Schulz indeed was engaged in his own amorous affair with a young woman with soft hands and a teasing way. Well, his wife wasn't aware of him, and she wasn't reading Peanuts, and in fact, we weren't reading Peanuts either that way. We were seeing it, and in some ways, it's the brilliance of Peanuts. You can read it on its very simple level and become aware of its complexities later.
Well, Lucy is also bossy and belittling, and you have to wonder whether Joyce was, or whether she was, if she made the connection with Lucy, whether she was a little insulted.
I think she was piqued once to be described by Saturday Evening Post as shrewish, and I think she avoided the connections from life to art and art to life. I think Joyce Halverson Schulz by that time was really living a very active life in the community in Santa Rosa and wasn't paying a great deal of attention to what a thorough biographer will then go to great lengths to study in 7 years.
What was their marriage like?
I think it was strained by the fact that Charles Schulz was the kind of guy who decided he was not going to have a public role. He was not going to be out in the world. And his wife very much was an out-in-the-world kind of person.
Well, they married before he became famous, before he had this incredible success. And different people handle that in different ways.
She was always get up and go. Even when they lived in the Twin Cities right after their marriage, it was she who was pushing them westward, pushing them in the great American pattern towards the West and towards opportunity and towards great, great big things. Charles Schulz always had an eye for the main chance and a great ambition. But I actually believe that without his first wife, Joyce, without the inspiration that she gave him as a man, as a cartoonist, that she directly gave Peanuts, we'd have a very different Peanuts today.
How many kids did they have?
Five children. Joyce, then Steele, brought to the marriage a single one child. She was single and divorced and with a child, and they then had four children after that.
You know, it seems weird to be talking about a guy who did a comic strip so seriously, and yet Peanuts is unlike any other comic strip. I mean, this was one of the most successful comic strips in the history of American culture. It kind of revolutionized comic strips, didn't it? At its height, it was read by 300 million people in 26,000 newspapers in 75 countries and 21 languages. It's something a lot more. Is that because Schultz is more than just a cartoonist? You say that he felt that he was creating these characters. He was talking like a novelist might talk.
I think it was really personal. It was almost like a diary for him in the way that he depended on and needed and came to that cartoon every single day as the greater part of his identity. I think he gave it something personal that very few comic strips have. In the same way, we as readers took it personally, and people adopted different parts of the Peanuts comic strip. Snoopy, in all his many forms, Linus, Lucy, even the music, the Vince Guaraldi theme songs, the Charlie Brown specials. All of these became part of our experience of growing up, part of our experience of understanding our own frustrations, longings, desires, loneliness, alienation, the very personal themes that you find even in the very first bars of some of the music one hears at Christmas time bring you back to your own life. And I think that's why people bring it so closely to themselves. A novel you put down, you stop reading Moby Dick and you put it away. Peanuts you always carry with you. It's the great magic of comics.
And do you feel that the characters developed over the years?
Absolutely. Charlie Brown goes through enormous changes from being actually a very grandiose guy in the beginning, thinking of himself as a potential presidential candidate. Of course, it's Snoopy later who actually ran for president. You see Lucy changing from a very young little girl to a wildly original, almost magically real, profoundly strange character, actually. She's right up there with the Red Queen and Lewis Carroll and a few other of the greats. There's no question that Snoopy went through enormous evolutions as well.
And his drawing changed, at least for a while. The early strips don't look anything like the later scripts, but then they become standardized for many, many years.
And they certainly did, and to continue the evolution up through the 80s and 90s, Schultz continued to experiment. The forms change again, and in fact, he was one of those great artists who managed to take a failing of his hand, the shake in his hand, and make a beautifully warm strip that had a real humanness in it because of that shake. People have often compared it to the way Katharine Hepburn used the quaver in her voice later in her career.
Were these people all based people? Were his characters all based on people he knew?
Well, he had the names that he applied to them were often from the real counterparts in his art instruction days in Minneapolis. But he was really patterning them on his own personality. He gave his own perfectionism and fanaticism, really, to Schroeder. He always described himself as a fanatic when it came to art and to comic art. He gave his sarcasm and, as he would say, my occasional meanness to Lucy. He gave to Linus what he called his weird little thoughts. Snoopy was his dreaming and grandiose side that often had been in childhood deflated. Snoopy is constantly rocketing into the air, but then coming back to the dog dish.
Had he had a dog named Snoopy?
Spike was a dog on which the model... there was a moment when Peanuts was about to go into wide syndication. He discovered that a comic strip character had a character named Sniffy, a dog, and realized that he couldn't name his own dog Sniffy. That was the first name he had had for it. Back he went to the drawing board, and as he was on his way literally back to the studio, irritated that he was going to have to find a new name, into his head popped the memory of his mother, who died young, saying to him, well, let's have for our next family dog a dog named Snoopy, which was a Norwegian term of endearment. Snoopy was born out of his memory, I think, of his mother's departure.
And you said that his Snoopy's fantasies about fighting the Red Baron came from his kid, but they must have also have been based on Charles Schultz's experiences in the military.
Well, actually, they were more based on Charles Schultz's experiences at the Park movie theater in St. Paul. He remembered those World War II movies in which they would say, you're not going to send those men to die in those crates, are you? He had a strong sense of the First World War, as any boy growing up in the 20s and 30s would. he was thinking of somehow working in some parody of a World War One movie when into his studio walked his son with a Sop with Camel, a biplane, and suddenly it jumped into his mind that he'd put Snoopy in the plane.
You said that his mother died young. She died right before he went into the Army.
She died on a Monday. He and his father buried her on a Friday, and the next day, Saturday, the Army took him away to Camp Campbell, Kentucky. It was really the day that divided his life and that forever after he looked back on as the turning point.
My guest is David Michaelis, whose latest biography is called Schultz and Peanuts, and it is published by Harper. When you commit to writing a biography, you're committing to living with somebody for a while. What was it like living with Charles Schultz?
It's a marriage. Well, getting up every day, I had the great pleasure of laughing with Peanuts. I mean, that was for me the great thing. The other parallel was that I felt strongly I had a sort of almost a co-author. Charles Schultz's dedication to the strip, to his art, to his devotion to craft was a guideline for me every day when I got up to attend to mine.
And you had access to letters and other things?
His letters, especially in the Second World War, in later years, the cache of letters he sent to this young woman with whom he was enamored, the business correspondence at United Feature Syndicate that United Media generously allowed me to go and study, the studying of the comic strip, both in its online form, which allowed me to put in a single word like love or hate, finding out where and how often it appeared in Peanuts. There was any number of ways to look at such an enormous subject. And I guess for me, coming back to that strip every morning was a way of really finding my way to the heart of it.
Well, I'm assuming that some of the material was given to you by family members. So why were they upset that you then found stuff in that material that revealed things about him that they didn't want in the book? Is it that they just didn't want that portrayal, or they felt that you'd missed him?
I think they felt and feel that this is a portrait that only takes account of his inner life or his artistic life or his life as a complicated person, which I think everyone agrees on. I think they wish to have a more sense of the light and laughter that filled his life as well. I was really focusing very strongly on Schultz's complications because I think they reveal so much about him as an artist. And when you look at Peanuts, I think the dominant chord is a melancholic chord. It's a minor key chord, but you know, you see Snoopy dancing and you see all that. But the sources in Schultz's life for melancholy, for loneliness, for alienation are widespread and pervasive.
Now, he was called Sparky throughout his life, wasn't he?
Sparky was the name given to him just after birth by an uncle who followed the comics and wanted to call him the name of the racehorse in Barney Google, Sparkplug.
So he actually was born into comic stripdom in an odd way.
His legend starts young, absolutely. And his ambition for the comics began at a very early age. So comics are his destiny, and it turned out his fate. He died on the last night before his very final strip appeared in the paper.
He grew up in Minnesota. Was in rural or
St. Paul, Minnesota, a barber's son. He was actually very much a city boy and visiting country cousins. His sense of himself as a city boy was profound.
Did he start drawing when he was very young?
Around 5, 6, 7 is his earliest memories drawing. And one of his country cousins would always remember later a pair of knickers that were a pair of hand-me-downs from his cousin Sparky in the city. And he put his hand into the right pocket and found a hole there from the pencil that Schultz always carried with him.
You said there's a melancholic side, and rejection and disappointment are recurring themes in Charlie Brown's life. How much, you're saying that's a reflection of Charles Schultz's life, but Charles Schultz, after a very short time, became one of the richest artists in the history of America.
Well, his life as a child and his life in high school was very much marked by a sense of his shyness, of his alienation, and he really withdrew. And in some ways, in withdrawing, people couldn't really connect with him, and then he more or less assigned to them the rejection that he felt he had been given unfairly and that he wasn't understood and misunderstood. His mother died young. He wanted always for her to understand that he had been worthy and had been what he had hoped he would be. And I think he took his injuries with him into life and rarely gave them anything more than the constant daily scrutiny in Peanuts, but he rarely let up and let go.
Well, you mentioned Snoopy's love object, the the puppy with the soft paws. What about the little red-haired girl? Was there such a person?
There was. There was indeed Donna Mae Johnson, a woman that Schultz was engaged in very, very close dating kind of life in the 50s. He hoped to be engaged to her. He kept pressing the question. She was, meanwhile, dating several other fellows, but the one that she chose ultimately was, in effect, the boy next door. Sparky was a jazzy St. Paul cartoonist. He was on the go, and she wanted a quieter life and chose the guy who was taking his firefighter's test in Minneapolis.
Made a terrible mistake.
Well, she never thought so. And in fact, she was always cast somewhat unfairly in real life as someone who had given up on the great artist who had then gone on to become a great success. She's been very happy in her life, and Schultz and she actually maintained contact over the years and remained friends and corresponded, and I think she felt she had done exactly the right thing for her.
The strip was first syndicated in 1950, but really took off in the 60s. Do you think it's because of something that was happening in the 60s?
Well, the 60s were so much a period of doubt, self-doubt, self-examination. People were looking for themselves, searching. So much of Peanuts is are raising those very questions. What is happiness, which was a great hippie question? What are we here for? What are we doing? Where are we going? All those questions, one way or another, came through Peanuts in this very pithy, and if you remember, those were the days of bumper stickers and lapel pins, and there was no one giving pithier statement to the moods of the moment than Peanuts.
But then later, some people became upset because they felt that he was injecting religion into the strip. This was supposed to be a universal strip.
An unfair criticism. Charles Schultz's evangelical life, which began around 1948 when he was baptized, and lasted for about 10 years until he moved to California. And as he grew older and his life developed, by 1974, he was found declaring himself, if he had to — he really didn't want the label, but he said, if I had to say what I was now, my beliefs have changed and I'm a secular humanist. Nothing could be further, of course, from evangelical Christianity than what everyone would determine was secular humanism. Into the strip, however, went the fruits of his life as a theological scholar, which was a daily and continual thing for him. And so scripture became part of what the Peanuts kids looked into to understand life and to pose life's questions. The Christian doctrine is essentially founded in part on the ideas of charity, of faith, of hope, the great three that St. Paul mentions. It's very hard to find those things in Peanuts.
It's interesting that after he wrote that last strip, the strip continued. They didn't get another person. They just kept on running the old ones because they have a kind of timelessness. The off-Broadway musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, sold out for 4 years. It's still a staple of high school theater. And there are all those television specials that get brought back. I'm sure there are still lunchboxes and T-shirts and calendars, all with the faces of the various characters. So there is a kind of a timelessness to Peanuts.
Peanuts is here to stay. There is the big themes of life are in Peanuts. The themes that one finds in Tolstoy, the themes one finds in Proust. There's any number of ways to look at Peanuts, and Peanuts itself has become such a pervasive part of the culture that we see it across the board and hear it last night on the news. Someone was talking about a report from Iraq and used this sound, wah, 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 coming from Iraq, meaning we're not getting the truth, we're getting that old adult sound that came out of the Peanuts specials. You hear it in the language. Schultz himself, when he died, was eulogized in the language that he invented. Good grief. You know, sigh, rats, og, all the different sounds and language of Peanuts are with us still, and I think the idea of fortitude in the face of life's trials is still one that people respond to.
David Michaelis, Michaelis, the author of A Biography of Another Artist, N.C. Wyeth, and other books and magazine articles now, Schultz and Peanuts, A Biography from Harper. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lenny.
Thank you.